In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Oh,
yeah. It's time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, Stillwater Avenue, Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Alan Adams with us in studio. Happy Monday, sir.
Happy Monday to you as well.
How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. A little on the busy side. Had some stuff going on. And then, of course, the big game yesterday and all that stuff.
I was trying to remember who had it right, you or Stella.
Well, it's funny because she definitely had her paw on the pulse as far as like how the scoring was going to go down. But I did pick the Chiefs. So
there you go.
So I think you gotta hand it to me because
there's no question.
Yeah. I think my call was a final of 35-17.
It's not bad.
31-20. It was pretty close. Hey. It was pretty close.
So I say to you, who's a good boy?
Is it me?
It is you.
Oh yeah. Boy. Okay. I was hoping it was me, but I wasn't sure.
Later, when you're closer, I will rub you behind your ear.
Oh, aren't you the best?
I am. Try to be.
You know how to make a good boy feel good.
I do. you got to see some movies this weekend too.
I did. Actually, it's funny. I did something that I only rarely get the opportunity to do. Sometimes when the schedule plays out just right, I went back to back. I showed up at the Bangor Mall Cinemas at noontime, and sat down and watched the rhythm section, and then walked out into the lobby, bought another ticket, and then went back in to see Gretel and Hansel.
Okay.
So yeah.
Do we want to cover them in that order?
Sure, that's fine.
All right, let's do it.
So the rhythm section, which, apologies in advance, I'm almost certainly going to call it the rhythm method at least one time over the course of this conversation. I actually had to go through my story and double check, and I did in fact refer to it as the rhythm method one time in the body of the story. So I need to just get it out there.
Sure, sure.
Just so everyone's aware. I'm talking about the same movie, regardless of what I might say. It was funny. I was actually, I had a little bit of hope for this one, only because I love a good revenge movie. And this one looked, certainly the trailers gave the indication that it would be sort of that ilk. And I mean, it is a revenge movie, but it's not a good one. it's less of an enjoyable time seeing it when it's not a good one. And it's really it's weird because Blake Lively stars, who I didn't have a lot of use for her early on, but like she's shown me some stuff in her last few outings. Like I think she's genuinely talented. She maybe makes some odd choices and attaches herself to some projects that maybe look good on paper but don't necessarily come through in the execution. I think this might be that in that latter category. So the rhythm section, she stars as a young woman named Stephanie, who has sort of spiraled into this awful place of drug abuse and prostitution following the tragic death of her entire family in a plane crash 3 years prior. And she's working in this brothel in London, and an investigative journalist comes to see her and says, "There's a chance that that what happened to that plane wasn't an accident."
Mm.
And so she basically pushes him away, but he leaves his card, and she has a change of heart and reaches out to him, and that's where she learns that. He has sort of uncovered this vast conspiracy involving terrorist bombings and the elimination of certain political figures. Someone who happened to be on that plane, and her family was collateral damage. So she decides that she's going to exact her revenge on the man who made the bomb. But she fails to follow through and inadvertently leads the baddies to her newfound journalist friend's home, and that goes about as well as you would expect. And so she's left to flee to the countryside in an effort to track down the mysterious informant who gave her journalist friend all this information. A fellow known only by as B, the letter B. So she goes off into the countryside and finds this isolated cabin next to a lake. and then she gets taken down by B, who wouldn't you know it, it's Jude Law, Rich. Jude Law is B.
Wow.
And so he takes her to be the intruder that she is. And then she demands of him to help her find a way to exact revenge on those who have who took her family from her. And then over a indeterminate but seemingly far too fast stretch of time, she detoxes, gets clean from the heroin, and then becomes physically fit and learns how to fight and shoot and all these things in an amount of time that really seems maybe not sufficient to develop the sorts of skills. Because here's the thing, B sends her off to Madrid to meet this information broker type named Sarah, played by Sterling K. Brown, and is like, yeah, you're gonna have to accept a contract from him. And she's like, what do you mean? He's like, oh yeah, no, you're gonna assassinate somebody. And so she takes a contract, and her first assassination doesn't necessarily go as well as
one might hope.
Well, you know, and especially when you're still green, like you don't really know the ropes yet. And then we go from there, and she basically starts pulling at threads, trying to figure out who exactly was the one who pulled the trigger, so to speak, who ordered the event that led to the explosion that killed her family. And that's pretty much it. It's a weirdly convoluted movie. It's a movie where the timeline doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, it seems like some things take a really long time to unfold, and other things happen far too quickly. And there's not a lot of consistency to it, which makes it difficult to sort of to engage with any sort of real, consistency, I guess is the word. But I gotta say, it's not Blake Lively's fault. Like, she actually does a pretty good job here. It's a solid performance, especially considering that the narrative, and the plot isn't doing her any favors. But it's a good performance. It's the sort of thing where, I've said this before, but it's the sort of performance that you wish was in a better movie. Because she does, I mean, she really goes for it, but it's just not enough. It's not enough to overcome the many, many flaws in this script. A lot of plot holes, a lot of things that just don't make a lot of sense. Then you got Jude Law, who, he's fine, but he clearly has the demeanor of someone who's only on set for 3 days, so get what you can out of him before he has to go. Sterling K. Brown, who's phenomenally talented, like, he's such a good actor. And it's just, he feels wasted here. Like, it's just one of those kind of roles where it feels like just about anybody could do it, but they hired someone because he had some degree of name recognition and that sort of thing. It's funny because you would think, at least aesthetically, because, it's in Europe, and so there are all these beautiful places to look at. And all the visual splendor is kind of sucked out of the thing. And the action sequences, aside from one, which is okay, but they're clumsy and they're not really all that engaging. And it just never really clicks in any meaningful way. And so the end result is a movie that, you can maybe see the outline of something that was pretty good, but it just never gets there.
All right. Let's move on to Gretel and Hansel, which didn't have a lot of advance play. Is it one of those where that's because they just wanted to release it without anybody knowing?
Yeah, I'll put it this way. It's, it's not quite the sort of trash fire that you get around this time of year with certain kinds of horror movies. Like, it's better than that, but it's not a great movie either. It's really funny because it's fascinating how relevant Grimm's fairy tales have sort of stayed culturally, like the awareness that we have of them. Because the first collection, the first Grimm's collection was published, I want to say 1812, like over 200 years ago. And those were stories that were pulled from folklore and legend,
right.
and so those stories themselves were much older than that. But to see so many of them continually adapted in various forms, whether it's on the page, on the stage, on the screen, what have you, Like, it's really it really speaks to the universality of some of those stories, and it speaks to the sort of the underlying fear of the unknown, I think, that we all suffer as human beings. Hansel and Gretel is one of those stories where it's just like, you know, and everyone knows Hansel and Gretel. It's like the kids off into the woods, they leave the breadcrumbs, but it doesn't work out, and they find the gingerbread house and try to eat it, and then the witch wants to cook them and eat them, but they escape. Like, that's Hansel and Gretel in a nutshell. This isn't quite that. And there's a lot, there's some stuff here that works. Like, it's a wonderfully atmospheric sort of movie. Like, they do a really good job of establishing sort of a creepy kind of vibe throughout. There are a couple of pretty solid performances too, but it just never quite adds up, I guess. The basic gist here is, Gretel is, she's played by, I want to make sure I get the name right. Sophia Lillis. She played young Beverly in the It movies.
Oh, okay.
You know, she's one of that sort of cohort of young actors, this sort of up and coming generation that's sort of a new brat pack. I'm debating whether or not I want to try to make the It crowd happen. as far as that group, I'm not sure yet. She's living at home and caring for her younger brother Hansel with her mother. Her father is out of the picture. She's searching for a household to be taken into because her mother doesn't have anything, and you know they're basically slowly starving to death, and she can't find anything. And so her mother, who's mentally unstable, basically chases them out of the house and demands that they make their way through the woods to a group of foresters who will be able to take them in and give them jobs and help them survive. And so off into the woods they go. You know, things don't go great because, you know, they're young people in the woods without any sort of real real help. There's no food. They're very hungry. They're very tired. And so when they stumble across a lovely little marvelously appointed cottage in the literal middle of nowhere, instead of, considering the dangerous aspects of this place, they go take a peek in the windows. They see a table set with a sumptuous feast. And they're like, well, we want some of that. And they get into the house and they start eating. And that's when they're confronted by the lady of the house, a strange old woman named Hulda, and she's played by Alice Krieg. And then it starts to play out kind of like the story that you're familiar with. The whole deal, the sort of twist here is that we're living in a world where certain people, specifically certain young ladies, are born with supernatural gifts. Uh-huh. And you know, there's a legend of a young girl whose gifts were so powerful that she was abandoned in the woods by her family because you know, she was using those gifts for sinister purposes. I'll just leave it at the fact that you know, that story might come back into play at some point over the course of the movie. And that's it. And we have Gretel who's left to determine whether or not this weird old lady is being nice to her for altruistic reasons or for much more sinister ones.
Oh.
And you could probably work
like
out
a pretty good idea
which way that's going to come down. Like, it's funny because it's very slow moving. Like, it's got a real glacial pace. It feels both thin and overstuffed, which is the movie. Like, the runtime's like 87 minutes. Like, it is not a long movie, but there's still very little that actually happens. And sometimes you can get away with that. Like, if you have a sufficiently, well-constructed aesthetic, like if you can really ride that sort of creepy vibe, like you can get away with a thinner story. And they do a great job of generating the aesthetic here, but it's not quite enough it's just not quite strong enough to bear the load that they ask it to sort of carry. The performances are good. Sophia Lillis is really talented. Like, she's a really talented young actress, and I'm very excited to see the sorts of things that she does going forward. And she like she does the lion's share of the work in this movie. Like she's carrying it. And for someone that young to be able to do so, especially when you're sort of hamstrung by a thin plot, like a thin narrative, it's really impressive. Like she's got a lot of talent, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens for her down the road. And as the sort of we're just gonna call her the witch, Alice Creek, she's incredibly talented too, and she really finds a nice balance between the sort of classical sense of what we sort of picture as that kind of witch, while infusing it with a very different sort of energy. And she balances those two things really nicely. But ultimately, the performances aren't enough either. And so the biggest sin this movie commits is it's just dull.
Oh,
it's just
good.
Boring. And there are some moments. There are some moments that are really great where it's just like, oh, that is some great horror movie stuff. Like that's a really striking image. That's a really powerful moment. But they're just far too few of those moments. And there's far too much just sort of, it just feels like padding. And, you know, and when you're padding with, you know, wide shots and, you know, lingering close-ups and stuff, like it's hard to keep an audience engaged. And I know I checked out, and I have no doubt that many of my theater-going cohort also would check out. Although I wouldn't know in the screening of Gretel and Hansel that I went to, because I was the only one in the theater.
That's not a good
sign. Yeah, you don't love to see that.
All right. Well, we thank you, Alan.
Hey.
As often is the case, for seeing them in lieu of us.
That's right. I do it so you don't have to.
Thank you.